It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Oh, man, I'm so excited to have you guys here on Money for Lunch. It is a fantastic lineup today. Very excited. I think that today's show is my second to last show for 2015. It blows me away that, 2015, unfortunately, just flew by, which is a sign of aging. Unfortunately, the older we get, the faster that time moves. It's just one of those things. All right, so I've been reading from Business Insider. They came out with a story called The 13 Things Mentally Strong People Don't Do. And we're going to be sharing one of these every day. Even though we're going to have some tape shows, we are going to be sharing some of these on our upcoming tape shows. So this is awesome stuff here. This is number three. They don't shy away from change. Booyah. We are all about change. And change is a constant, never-ending thing. And the only way we get better is through change. So there are five stages of change. It's pre-contemplation, contemplation, preparation, action, and maintenance. Following through with each of these five steps is crucial. Making change can be frightening, but shying away from them prevents growth. The longer you wait, the harder it gets. And other people, here it is, listen to this, other people will outgrow you. So there you go, folks. Anyway, just a thought. We're going to get our show started with our first guest, Penny Zinker. Penny Zinker is a productivity expert, strategic business coach, international speaker and trainer, and best-selling author of The Productivity Zone. Her P10 Productivity Accelerator system balances the skills and mindsets of our behaviors. The program is based from her extensive experience as a master neuro-linguistics practitioner and neurostrategist, as a successful entrepreneur, and as a Tony Robbins business coach, coaching highly successful business leaders in their roles, relationships, and building culture. She will challenge you to think differently and inspire you to be your best. Penny Zinker, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me here, Bert. It's great to be here.
You know what? I'm excited to have you here, and I want to kind of get started on this because I think productivity is such a it's so important, but sometimes, you know, it's one of those words that as soon as you hear productivity, people just try to tune out a little bit. And it's kind of a weird thing because we do all need to be more efficient. We need to be more productive, but I think productivity overwhelms people. What's your thought?
Well, I think people are overwhelmed to begin with. So the minute that they think of adding another thing on, oh, I can't do another thing. I think that's what they, you know, they get the impression that it means that they have to do more. It's actually helping them to do less and achieve more, right?
Right. No, and that's, I think that's a great definition of being productive, to achieve more and to have, without necessarily being overwhelmed with just being more efficient with your time. So real quick, tell us a little bit about what is the productivity zone.
Well, the productivity zone, and that's the name of my best-selling book that I brought out in January. It's, you know, it's a whole range. It's like people want to understand, okay, well, how do I get more productive? And it's kind of like that running zone when you get in the flow, you know, when people talk about how time goes away and you don't feel anything and you're just running. So this is how we are day to day when we're getting things done and being efficient and effective. We're in the productivity zone, and there are 10 core drivers that help us to get in the zone and stay in the zone, which is cool because it's not like one little point. It's like a whole region. And then, of course, outside of the zone is where we need to stay away from. That's where stress lives, and procrastination and perfectionism are on either side of the zone.
A little bit, I want to talk a little bit about why we as people don't do what we're supposed to do. How is it that we get so lost? I mean, I don't know about you, Penny, and I don't know about anybody else listening out there, but I have literally spent a couple of days, you know, not in a row, thank goodness, but I've had days where I've spent all day at work and literally cannot measure anything that I've done. Done nothing.
I'm sure that nobody else can relate to that, Brent. Well, and that's the thing, and that, you know, I want to start there, is that we have those days where we're like, where did the day go? You know, it's funny that you said that the older we get, the faster time moves. I hate to tell you guys, but time doesn't move faster, right?
Oh,
and in each of those days that we just didn't get anything accomplished or we didn't feel that way, is we still have the same 24 hours as in the days where we felt like we got a ton done. So I want to be the, you know, spoiler alert and say it's not about time at all. So the very first thing that we need to do is shift away from focusing on time, because when we focus on something we cannot control, it creates stress. And so that's one of the key things that's creating stress for us, is we're focusing on time. And, you know, the core question that you asked is, why don't we do what we know? It's like, if I were to give you a couple of tips on time management, you'd probably say, oh, I know that.
Right?
To focus on, give an example, to focus on what's important versus urgent. You've heard that before, right?
Absolutely.
Well, why don't you do it, right? And you know, the funniest thing is that when you see someone else focusing on the wrong things, you just want to shake them and be like, it's so obvious. But it's not obvious to us, right? When it's us looking in the mirror at ourselves, it's just not obvious.
Well, and you know what? And I'll tell you something that I have a challenge with, okay? And this, is, I think, is something that happens to all of us in the creative arts. You wrote a book. Most likely, it's not like when you're writing a book or creating something, it's sometimes, to me, difficult to sit there and just pound it out and say, okay, you know, good, I'm done. You know, you
right.
go through this creative thing, and sometimes you write out a sentence and you go, oh, you know, I don't like that, let me rewrite it. And all of a sudden, you know, you're spending, you know, you spent, you know, 4 hours and you've gotten, you know, three or four sentences done. Or even worse than that is when, you know, you got a chapter that you're trying to, you know, you have the title for the chapter, but no other words are coming forth, right? And that's more, you know, in other words, sometimes, back to what you're talking about, you know, sometimes we cannot control our creativity flow, right?
Right.
Or am I wrong on that?
I think you're wrong on that. I'm sorry. I'm going to call you on that.
All right,
I believe that a lot of people feel that way, right? And what happens is you're right. You know, I've heard that before. I've got writer's block. I'm not inspired, right? Stuck, or I'm not in the mood to write or to create. And, you know, I hate to tell you, but that's on the outside of the productivity zone. That's procrastination. We're getting ourselves stuck in a story, and then we keep telling ourselves that, oh, I'm stuck. I'm in a writer's block. Well, if you tell yourself that you're in a writer's block, or that you're stuck, or that you're not in the mood or whatever, then bam, you got what you told yourself. So we've got to get out of our own story that we're creating that's an unproductive story. So, because there are things that we can do to get ourselves motivated, get us in the mood. And this is going to be one of the things where I'm going to mention a couple of those things, and you're probably going to say, yeah, I know that, but we're not doing it in the moment. So because we're stuck in our own story. So we have to break that pattern and say, no, I'm not going to accept that. I got stuff to do today, and that's, you know, talk to that side of yourself and say, go away, and then employ, and then remind yourself, right? Create some reminders, have something on your desk that will help you to get into a different state. Get up, right? One of the big things is if you're stuck in where you're sitting and where you're working, and this isn't just for creative people, is your physical movement will change the state that you're in. They say that people who are depressed, one of the things that they ask them to do is to start exercising, to walk, just to simply walk in the morning, and it changes their mood. So one of the things to do is to get up and take a walk and maybe sit in a different chair, sit in a different place, and you'll see that your state of mind will change, and that might be able to help you get in a better writing state. There's also things that you can do to trigger, like visualizations. You know, can you remember a time when you were really inspired and how that felt? And then you can take yourself back to that time. Maybe it was a song that you were listening to. Maybe it was a place, and you can imagine yourself being there. And just through the power of the mind and imagining yourself for 5 minutes kind of meditating on that place, that makes all the difference. Have you ever heard that before?
You know what? I have not utilized that before. I've heard it, but I've never, you know, used it in the example you just gave, right? Because, you know, I think one of the things that I have discovered in my life is that, you know, you pick up some tools here and there. And then, of course, unless you use them on a regular, consistent basis, you forget that you have those choices.
That's right. So, I call it temporary amnesia.
Yes,
and so we have to set reminders for ourselves. You have to put reminders in place.
Yeah, a simple list of the 4 or 5 things that it helps you get inspired and get creative, right? The 4 or 5 things
That's
you can
right.
do to change your state, the 4 or 5 things you can do. I like that because, especially we get ourselves conditioned, kind of like you're talking about. You're used to sitting in a certain chair, and all of a sudden sitting in that chair in that certain way brings on certain stories, and you have certain feelings, and all of a sudden you're not as productive because that's the story that you say to yourself when you sit in that chair in that certain way.
Right, right. And I know it's so simple to do, and as you know, Jim Rohn had said this, he said it's simple to do and it's simple not to do. So if you just have a little sticky and a bright colored sticky on your desk somewhere that you can see that reminds you each time you look up and there it is, so it'll remind you when you're stuck, okay, right, I can do those few things.
All right, hold on 1 second, Penny. We're going to take a quick commercial break, and then we'll
Absolutely.
Be back. All righty.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Then let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we're back. We are speaking with Penny Zenker. And Penny was just destroying some of my story here about writer's block and not being creative or whatever. We've all used those type of excuses to procrastinate. And we've just come up with several different ways of breaking through that procrastination. One of them is simply getting out of the usual area that you sit. Maybe you need to go to a different area. Maybe you need to walk around. Maybe you need to do a little 3 or 4 minute exercise routine to really just change your state and get things flowing again. So writer's block is something that we can control, in your opinion.
Yeah. I mean, we can control a lot more than we think we can. I believe that's something we can control. I could give you another tip of why we don't do what we know, and we could talk about this a little bit, is that we really don't want it bad enough. We're not connected with why it's important to us and how bad we really want it. And so we have to create leverage for ourselves. And sometimes that leverage is, you probably heard the story about the Admiral Cortez who told his men to burn the ships. He wanted that success bad enough that he was willing to take away any way back.
And it's funny you should say that, because probably most of us have experienced some kind of bridge burning like that, right? We've all had something that we wanted so bad that we became unstoppable. We've all experienced our young children nagging us until we cave in. You know, and I'm using that as, you know, obviously a very rudimentary way of getting what you want, but still that, you know, the persistence breaks down resistance, right? And so when we want something bad enough, we do become unstoppable. We'll stay up, you know, we'll do 24, you know, we'll do a 24-hour study session because we want to pass that class bad enough. We will, we'll get into our healthy zone where we're watching what we're eating, we're really working out. Why? Because we want to fit in that dress, we want to look good for that very important social event. So you're right, I like that. When it's really important, when we want it bad enough, there are no excuses.
That's right. And so we have to, we can't accept the excuse, and that goes back to the story. We can't accept the excuses that we give ourselves. We can't let ourselves off the hook.
Talk about this, because when is it an excuse? I mean, when is it legitimate? Because one of the challenges that we all have as business owners is that we have no accountability. If we want to take the day off and screw off, we can. So, you know, so Penny, how do we hold ourselves accountable? How do we not take our own excuses?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of different ways. The best way is multiple prong, right? It's kind of like, unfortunately, I don't know who it was. I think it was in the 60s that they invented the snooze button. Like those kinds of things, not good for us, right? Just not good. Gives us the excuse to hit the snooze. So we can't allow ourselves to hit the snooze in anything. So we have to have different ways that back up. So that's why it does ring after you sleep through it. So we have to, one of the reasons that, I have a coach, and I think everyone should have a coach, especially if you own your own business, because you don't have someone else who you can really, brainstorm with and at the same time to hold you accountable externally. Like I go to a personal trainer, and I do that because he pushes me harder than I would push myself. I mean, those last four reps, there's no way I would do those on my own. and it just reminds me, right? And it just reminds me in my life how I have to, push through a little bit of the discomfort to get to the growth, kind of like what you said with persistent breaks down resistance.
It's interesting. I like what you said there. You're right. A coach obviously is going to make us better. I mean, you look at the most successful people that I know have some kind of a coach, some kind of an accountability partner, whatever you want to call them. And, you know, and sometimes it's just a peer that doesn't let you use any excuse that really kind of holds you to, holds you to your best to get those four reps done or whatever the situation is. Certainly I believe in having a coach, and I believe in accountability. We all know, and this is one of those, oxymoronic things of human nature, we all know that being held accountable makes us better. But
yes,
we don't want to be held accountable.
Right, exactly. Right? It's the catch-22. It's because we're designed. Our brains are actually designed to make us lazy. Our brain wants to take the path of least resistance. So we have to override that computer programming and say, no, I'm going to push harder. And that's why I said externally is a really important way to do that. And externally could also be dates that you set for yourself, right? Self-imposed dates. But so, for instance, when I released my book, I held myself under the gun, and it was about June time, and I said, okay, I'm going to release the book on my birthday in January. And then I announced it, right, and I put it out there, so then I would lose face if I didn't do it, right? So I gave myself a deadline, and then I kind of etched it in stone. So then I had to work my way backwards to figure out, okay, what needs to be done by when in order for me to make that date.
I like that. I like that. Peer pressure, a very positive, useful way of using peer pressure to hold yourself accountable. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. You mentioned, the way we are wired to be lazy or to find the least passive resistance. It's unfortunate, but I wholeheartedly believe that's true. I mean, you look at anybody, and the reason that 85, 90% of us have mediocre lives is because we choose the path of least resistance. Mm-hmm. Now, you look at the people who stand out, the heroes. I don't care whether they're in sports or in literature or acting or, you know, whatever, you know, politics, wherever you find your heroes, most likely you're looking at somebody who has the mindset of pushing themselves and not, you know, not taking excuses from themselves and demanding more of themselves mm-hmm. than anybody else.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's got to be a commonality in the people that succeed. And there's been a lot of best practices and articles and things that say that that's the truth. So, again, it's one of those things that we know. So now it's time to, you know, yeah, you might be afraid, right? Fear's a big thing that holds people back. Sure. You might be afraid. You don't know what's on the other side and what if I screw up. And you know, and I said, well, what if this was all a game? Wouldn't you play it differently?
Mm. I like that. What a right there is a mind shift for everybody listening. What if it was just a game? In my experience, I have seen a lot of people, including myself, not play their best or not play at all because they were fear of judgment. You know, whether it's fear
yes.
of failure or fear of not being good enough or not being loved, whatever all that is, that judgment of other people really is one of those fears that crushes a lot of dreams. But what if it's just a game? I like that. It changes everything immediately.
Right. You'd play differently, right? So, and that's
right
something,
there.
Exactly. I think you just, you know, shift your mindset because we take things too seriously. And all those things that you said about judgment and all those types of things, that's what pushes us outside of that productivity zone, right? Fear of judgment makes us perfectionists or makes us procrastinate. That's why those are on the other side. Once we give that up and just say we want to be the best and we're only comparing ourselves to the best of how we showed up last week. So if we can show progress, to me, productivity is focused on progress, not on what someone else did and it could be if that makes sense, if it's like, you know, you've got a goal to hit an industry standard or something like that. But really at the end of the day, the real measurement is where was I yesterday? And am I progressing? And if I'm not, what did I learn? And that's progress too, because I learned something. And so now I can integrate that.
Productivity is about progress. There's another takeaway. Productivity is all about progress and not about comparing yourself, but really, you know, comparing yourself to somebody else. It's really about comparing yourself to what you've set up as your standard. What is the goal that you
right.
want to hit? And you have to be clear about that. Let's talk about this real quick. What is this connection between energy management and our productivity? Talk about that for a little bit.
Okay, absolutely. Well, you know, going back to, I said there's 10 core drivers that get us into the productivity zone. Well, there's 4 of those drivers make up how we manage our energy. And the reason that that's important, and it's everything, energy is everything. In the context of, we talked about, we have the same number of hours in the day. So we can't control time. So what is it that we can control? What makes the difference from a day that really flows and a day that doesn't? It's how we show up for the time that we have. So it's how we manage our energy that makes all the difference, because that's what then determines our mood and our state, as we talked about before. And so if you think about it, stress, if we take the opposite side, stress is a form of energy. And stress is like secondhand smoke, and it affects everyone around you, right? Your family, your office colleagues, even your clients.
Sure.
And so that's not an energetic state. So we can see it from a negative perspective that energy spreads and has an effect on our productivity. So now it's, well, how do we control it and show up at our best at all times, as often as we can, you know, shift quickly? I mean, we're human. We're going to fall out of the zone. But we know
right.
when we have these core drivers, we know how to get back in quickly.
Sure. Well, and I think it goes, again, back to that conditioning, right? Once we know that we have this ability to shift, that we know that, hey, I don't have to be in a bad mood, or I don't have to be unproductive, or I don't have to have writer's block. I can do other things to change my state or change the way I feel, then we go back to that, we go back to those tools, if you will, to help us manage our state and our energy. And I like this idea, you know, managing our energy so we can be more productive, but not just in the sake of accomplishing something, but by managing our energy, we're going to show up differently with, as you mentioned, with our colleagues, our loved ones. We get to impact those people around us in a different way because we have consciously mm-hmm. made the decision to manage our energy differently.
That's right. And you manage their energy, right? Once you get control of how to manage your energy and you know what the components are, now you can help other people to shift their energy. They might not even be aware of it. And, you know, and that then is a ripple effect.
Yeah, you know what? And we probably have all experienced that ripple effect in the sense that, you know, somebody shows up and they have that bad energy, call it stress, they're in a bad mood, they're mad, they, you know, whatever you want to call it. And then, of course, everybody feels that, right? And the boss comes in, takes it out on a couple of his VPs, and that spreads throughout the entire office. All of a sudden, you have the entire office affected by this one person.
That's right.
That's the, you know, the ripple effect. All right. You know what? We are we're out of time, but Penny, I would love to bring you back, in January. I'd love to bring you back in January to talk more about productivity. January is obviously a time where people are talking about productivity and new goals and hitting new
Absolutely.
Highs. And I'd love to bring you back and talk more about the Productivity Zone. It's her best-selling book available at Amazon. And Penny Zinker, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing.
Thanks, Bert. It's great to be here.
You bet. Good stuff there about being productive. And it's interesting. I like what Penny was talking about not taking your own excuses. Isn't that the easiest, hardest thing to do? I mean, you know, we can always let ourselves out and justify our lack or justify our actions one way or the other. We'll be back right after this.
Did you bring the camera phone?
I did.
Do you want to go first?
I've been waiting for this all day.
Okay, this is Bro and Stacy.
Introducing Chase Quick Deposit. Just photograph the front and back of your check using the Chase mobile app on your iPhone and hit send.
It went through?
So cool.
This is so cool. You
want to
try it?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, who's next?
Make a deposit from anywhere, anytime with your iPhone.
To Mr. and Mrs. Walker, why would they send my parents a check?
Chase what matters.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch and check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All right, we're back. My next guest, David Mattson. David Mattson, CEO of Sandler Training, CEO of Sandler Training, an international training and consulting organization headquartered in the United States, has been a trainer and business consultant in the areas of sales, sales management, business development, corporate team building, and strategic planning. For more information, you can visit David and his team. Find out about David and his team at Sandler, Sandler.com. David Mattson, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thanks for having me, Bert.
You bet. All right, so, I have the book, LinkedIn, The Sandler Way. Thank you so much for sending that to us. I appreciate it. And this is, I think one of the things that I liked about this book is that it's just a wonderful, easy thing to read. It's a nice little resource guide. It's not like 400 or 500 pages like a technical wizardry, if you will. It's a fun book to read, and you can literally sit down and give yourself a couple of 2 or 3 hours and really change the way you're using LinkedIn, update your profile, and it's just really a simple step-by-step guide.
Yeah, I think if most people in our training programs around the world are trying to figure out how do I utilize social selling, you know, they hear the statistics, you know, 80% of the people that are using social selling are more productive. You got 50% more people hitting quota using it. The question is, how do I use it? Because I've got one group of people that probably spend way too much time with LinkedIn and social media. That's just become the default versus talking
right.
to humans. And then I've got the other group who is afraid of either technology or don't know what to do with it. And technology is not really being used to the fullest by a lot of the organizations. If you think about how many people have CRM that aren't using it or have great learning management systems that no one's accessing, you know, this tool, if used properly, really could help salespeople and businesses just be far more productive in finding and nurturing customers.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about that, because for most people, when they think of LinkedIn, and you said this right before the show, they think of it as a glorified contact manager or address book. And so when you think of LinkedIn, how do you think of LinkedIn? How do you position that in your mind or in your client's mind?
I think I look at it in two buckets. One, it's a great way for branding myself or branding our company, and so people can check us out. And, you know, so many people now in the buying cycle are looking to technology to educate themselves on you and your company prior to even calling you. And then the second bucket, I think, is really how do I, find customers, find prospects. There's there's a universe of people out there with the filters and with the tools. How do I actually go and find people? And really, for us, LinkedIn has become our number one prospecting tool. And I'm happy to give you the technique on how we do it. Out of 265 offices, we used to do so many different prospecting techniques. And, you know, LinkedIn's not a big fan of overt prospecting, and that's not what I'm suggesting. But there is a way that you could leverage relationships of your customers or people that you know to get in front of potential customers or prospects for you. And so from us, from a system-wide standpoint within Sandler Training, it is the number one tool.
Well, I think a lot of people would love to know how you guys are doing that. And you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that LinkedIn doesn't really like you guys, you know, doesn't like us to really, use it that way or overuse it that way. Just recently, I think a few months ago, they cut down the amount of messages you can send to people unless you're paying for their premium service. Is that right?
Yeah, so that, of course, you know, like with anything, they've got two things going on. One, there's just an awful lot of traffic going on within LinkedIn. And they know, and people who are using LinkedIn know, people are more apt to open up a LinkedIn in mail than they are from a same person in Outlook. Because you're bombarded with so many emails from Outlook, we tend to say, we'll get to that one. If you get an in-mail, which you're also, you know, you're triggered on your Outlook, you tend, 73% more times, you'll go and look at that. They know that, and so do people like us. So what happens is we're using that tool more and more. So that's one, which is that funnel is becoming overused, and it's becoming people aren't checking it as often as they should like they did in the past when it was new. And the second thing is, you're right, they've built this thing, and now they've got a lot of services that are going on top of it, and they're monetizing it. And so they're kind of cutting back on the free stuff, and you have to kind of pay to play.
Right. And again, there's nothing wrong with that because,
nope.
You know, LinkedIn does allow you to connect with people that you normally probably wouldn't connect with.
Right.
The other option is you can pick up a bunch, you know, you can do your regular cold calling, nothing wrong with that. You can send out direct mail, nothing wrong with that. You can go out and meet people in a networking environment. You can go out and go door to door, you know, in a business environment. But all those have a cost. They might appear to have no cost, but it's not true. You know, for you and I to sit there and pound the phones, there's a cost to that. For you and I to go to a networking meeting, there's a cost to that. You know, so there's always a cost to any kind of prospecting. And the advantage at LinkedIn is that, again, you're able to have a lot of data at your fingertips. That's at least one of my thoughts.
It's true. I think if and with your permission, you want to give me can I give a couple tips on how people can use that?
So yeah, let's do it.
I'll get to how we use it in a second. I think if I were listening, there's a couple of things that you certainly want to do. You got to put a picture in your profile. A lot of people aren't doing it, but you really need to. I think if you're going to connect with somebody, don't set this standard, I'd like to connect with you and make you part of my professional network. I think you need to type in a personalized note. You're going to have a much higher percentage of people accepting that, especially there's a high percentage, you know, 73% of people that you reach out to get an appointment will say yes if you just mention a common group that you're both in on LinkedIn, because they're looking for commonality. Are you a complete stranger? Is there any connection? So you certainly want to make sure that you've made that note, especially if you're going to connect or ask for something. But the bigger thing, I think, is two things. One is spend only 30 minutes a day on LinkedIn. This shouldn't be your full-time job. Now, are there exceptions? Sure, there are some exceptions. But I think it's a tool. As you said, there's a lot of different ways that you could prospect, and they have costs that are associated with that, 100% accurate. But this should be a tool in your toolkit. It's not really duct tape where, you know, we get to do everything with it. You should have a set time. And I also think that when you're explaining who you are on your profile, you should do it in a 30-second commercial, and versus this long list of, you know, we started the company in 1912, and then we moved down the street in 1914 and all that stuff. I mean, it's interesting, but I think in a quick profile, you should be saying, here's who I am. These are the types of customers and people that our company works with, and here are the types of problems that we solve. You want them to read it and say, that's me. And so it's really, if you change the way that you talk about yourself on LinkedIn, you're going to find that people know immediately types of companies you work with, problems that you solve, and it sets you apart from anyone else that they may be looking at. And here's how we use it. We use it in the sales process, and we use it to find customers. In the sales process first, we're going to use LinkedIn to make sure, hey, are we connected with anyone that this prospect or customer we're about to call on? We haven't done business with them in the past. Is there anyone that we have a mutual connection with? And you'll find more times than not, you actually do. So it's easy to get some behind-the-scenes intelligence and or to have that person you're connected with reach out to them and say, you're a rock-solid organization. You do what you say. You also get to look at the groups that they're associated with. And, you know, case in point, I went on a sales call, and we found before we went that our decision maker was actually an active member and followed our competitors. Well, that was kind of nice to know, right? Because you quickly find out that you're only one of the three bids that their company forces them to get. We were never going to be selected. Yeah, we were never going to be selected. So I think it's good for the homework. Here's how we get prospects. Now, each one of us have some customers, and you should go to your customers' connections. So, Bert, let's say that you and I are great. You're a customer of mine, and you know you've had some great success using Sandler. I would look at your connections, and I see that you're connected with the CEO of XYZ Company, Fred Smith. And so here's what I would do. I call you, or I'll email you, and I'll say something to the effect of, Bert, how well do you know Fred Smith? And if you know him well, would you be comfortable enough to introduce Fred to myself? And I've actually even included a quick introductory letter, because I know you're running 1,000 miles a minute, and I made it easy for you. But certainly, if you want to create your own, that's okay. But I really would appreciate an introduction if you know Fred. And that's the essence, and it's in the book. It's the essence. I send that letter out. You would be shocked. It's way over 70% of how many people, either they're going to be one of two responses, hey, I don't know Fred, or, yeah, absolutely. And they actually will take the letter in some way, shape, or fashion, because they're running and it's easy for them to edit versus create a letter, and they'll send the letter to Fred. Now, when you send that letter to Fred saying, hey, I've known Dave and Dave's got a great product, here's what we're doing, when he responds, which is typically, Bert, hey, it's nice to hear from you, I'm not sure whether we could use Dave, but certainly open to a phone call, it's very noncommittal, but I have now their phone number and their email address because they've given me permission to call them. That is so easy to do. And if I were a sales manager or an owner, I would be telling my salespeople, I want 5 of those letters a month or a week, whatever your frequency is, because you'll find that you'll have more opportunities to talk to net new prospects if you follow that process.
I love that process. Not only is that just a great use of, we call it a great leveraging of your customers, but it's also like a tacit endorsement. I mean, I'm not going to connect you with Fred unless I like, know, and trust you enough to do so.
Right. That's right. How many times have I asked you? I mean, if I asked you over the years, hey, Bert, do you know anyone that could use Sandler's products or service? And you always will say no. But the fact that I've identified somebody on your list, now you've got them in your mind, and exactly right. Are you going to feel comfortable or not? But there is no direct correlation to hard work and good service to the number of referrals that you get from your customers. No correlation. It's an active activity that you must do on your own because they're not jumping. Referrals aren't going to jump in the boat. You got to go find them. And that's why targeting specific names really helps the customer, and it helps you too, Bert, because you're going to say, oh, yeah, I do know Fred. And then right back to your comfort comment right there.
Yeah. And on the flip side of that, it also puts a little pressure on us, the prospecting individual, whatever, to make sure that we've taken care of our customers, right? Because you certainly don't want to call a customer who you didn't take care of because he's not going to help you. He's most likely he's going to chew you out.
Yeah, I think, listen, you got to make sure that your house is in order. And that's a big problem if you're not contacting your customers and making sure that they know that they love you. Customers will leave you not because of necessary economic reasons. They'll leave you because they don't feel appreciated or paid attention to. And, you know, we've heard it where, hey, I paid attention to you as a prospect and I forgot about you as a customer. And that always happens a lot, unfortunately, and it's because of the speed by which salespeople are operating. But when you hear that, like, hey, I'm uncomfortable giving you referrals, or you hear a lot of no's, don't blame the technique. I think you have to look in the mirror, to your point, and say, am I actually adding value and am I providing service to my customers? There must be a reason why they're saying no.
Yes. No, absolutely. I think that's a great indicator. Guys, if you want to get LinkedIn the Sandler way, it's available for free download. Where else? Sandler.com. That's Sandler.com. I would encourage you to go out there and get the book. I get no remuneration or anything like that, but I'm telling you, it's going to be a great resource. As David pointed out, there's a lot of practical uses of the book. He gave a fantastic way of using LinkedIn, and it's in the book. The other thing that's in the book, and I mentioned this kind of at the beginning of the segment, and that is there's a lot of practical tips that you may not be doing with your profile. Therefore, your LinkedIn profile isn't getting the views it should be getting. It's not getting... it's not optimized right, so it's not showing up in the search stream the way it should. There's a lot of great benefits of this book called LinkedIn, the Sandler Way. And David, I'd love to bring you back next year, talk more about using LinkedIn and maybe getting some more tips from Sandler.com. What do you think?
Love to have the opportunity. Thanks for inviting me.
You bet. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Good stuff there from David Mattson, CEO of Sandler.com. Again, the book I'm going to encourage you to go and get is LinkedIn, the Sandler Way. I assure you, I guarantee it will have an effect on your profile, and it'll probably be very quick. We'll be back right after this.
Welcome back to Geico Radio. It's savings on the radio.
Cooler, Steve. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I just got a free rate quote on Geico.com. Saved a ton, and it only took me 5 minutes and 12 seconds. I was wondering, is that some sort of record?
That's a good question. Let's have a look.
Not quite. Someone's got you beat by 8 seconds.
Still, I mean, that's quite fast.
Well, what if I told you I only use one hand?
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.
All righty, we're back. So far, we've had just an outstanding show, and I think that our next guest, our final guest, will keep the show going at this level of goodness, for lack of better terms. My next guest, Dr. Brandi Stankovic, is a professor, organizational change expert, motivational speaker, and mommy who inspires firms globally with her models of leadership, engagement, and award-winning education. Her clients include billion-dollar organizations, trade associations, nonprofit foundations. She's also coaches Pepperdine University doctoral students, teaches College of Southern Nevada undergraduates, and serves on the board for Children's Miracle Network Hospital, Aid for ADA, and the World Council of Credit Unions Global Women Leadership Network. Dr. Brandi Stankovic, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Hello there. Thanks for having me.
You bet. You bet. All right. So your book, The Strategic MVP, talk a little bit about your book. What was the inspiration to write the book?
Yeah, you know, through these economic times that we've had, or now that we're seeing the other end of the downturn, organizations are really focused on growth. We work with organizations all over the world, and in strategic planning this year, here in this last fourth quarter, all of the boards and directors and executives are saying, okay, how are we going to make growth a priority in 2016? And whether that's income or the number of clients, members, maybe an emerging division, even capital. And growth really can't happen without really energized and engaged employees. I'm sure you're seeing, and we're all seeing in the industries, and of course, depending on the industry, something like 40% of the workforce is eligible for retirement. So there's a major amount of people that are transitioning, a lot of C-suite or executive-level positions that are transitioning, and a lot of CEOs are worried about this skills gap. And the skills gap between those that are leaving and those that are coming into the positions. And those will be the people that will be leading this growth in the future. So the strategic MVP is really a tool to help an organization take their people and their company to the next level.
You know, it's mind-blowing. When you said, what was it, 40% are due to retire?
Yeah, I mean, depending on the industry, I work a lot in financial services, and it's upwards of like 47 or 48. And I know others are a little lower, others may be higher, but yeah, I mean, it's just this baby boomer generation that's transitioning.
And do they have like, do you think what, when you say transitioning, what, in the next 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah, the next 5 years. So they're eligible for retirement now. So we're seeing some organizations start creating their succession plans or their plans for the next 3 to 5 years. Some are moving out today. You know, it just kind of depends.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. All right, let's talk about this. In your book, again, Strategic MPV, available at Amazon, you talk about igniting your passion. Ignite your passion. Mm-hmm. You talk about this in page 13, passion-generated productivity, creativity and innovation. Talk about this.
Yeah, igniting your passion really is kind of the beginning, the fundamental of the book. In the first piece of it, we really want people to create a leadership pro forma. So, because so much in business, when we're doing business transactions, we spend a lot of time creating a plan. What's it going to look like in the future? What are we planning to do in an objective way? And so this igniting your passion is helping kind of stimulate that. I love in the intro you said we're going to continue this level of goodness. Well, igniting your passion kind of is creating, you know, that level of goodness. How can we figure out what we're really, you know, how can we focus on our strengths, but then also kind of take a look at what we need to enhance, or those opportunities for development in the next few years, and really saying where can I focus my energy and attention? And I think that a lot of organizations, it becomes routine. Even the most highly skilled leaders from day to day have routine. We're habitual, you know, beings, humans. And so what we want to do is shake that up a little bit and say, how can we like make it like it's Christmas morning, where you wake up and you're like, yes, it's Monday, I get to go to work.
that would be a, That would be nice, wouldn't it? And I think, you know, I know when I start a new project, I'm that way. I get excited. All right, I get, you know, the weekend kind of disrupts my flow. Yes, it would be nice to do that all the time and just have and just be passionate about what you're doing. Well, let's talk about this because I think this holds a lot of people back. You talk about getting over it. People are not interested in hearing about yesterday's baggage. And what caught my attention about this was sometimes yesterday's baggage is even reliving yesterday's victories, right? I mean, when we think of baggage, you know, a lot of times we think of the negative stuff, right? But, you know, it's like, dude, I don't want to hear about how successful you were, you know, 2 weeks ago or a month ago or how you, you know, how you won the number one employee award, you know, 5 years ago, you know, all that stuff's in the past. So talk about that. You know, how is, you know, what do you call it, hearing about yesterday's baggage, you know, holding us back?
Yeah, you know, and you bring up a really interesting point. A lot of times there's a legacy. We're talking about these CEOs transitioning, and they'll have left a legacy. They've built this organization for the last 30 or 40 years. And to your point, it was a great 30 or 40 years. Well, the next 30 years are going to be a different 30 years. So how can we let go of some of that, you know, give it the respect that it deserves, but let go of it and be able to move forward? And a lot of times from a personal space, too, people will have things that have impacted them before, and then we let it kind of, you know, be in our mind. Let me give you an example. When the very first time I did a keynote presentation, it was, you know, probably 20 years ago now, but I was really nervous and I had transparencies. Do you remember that? I mean, I can't even believe I shouldn't even say something like that. I was walking up to the transparency, the projector, and I dropped them along with my workers. I mean, it went all over the floor, the whole audience, because I kind of tripped at the same time, like, it was so nervous for me. And then I get up there and I'm like, okay, I have two choices. I can have this impact me today and the rest of my life, or I can look at this as this silly story that you tell, you know, 20 years from now. And really, it's about being able to just say, okay, get over it. I'm working through some human resource things. We're having to terminate an employee. And it's a tough time. Anybody that's working through that, I'm working with an organization that's doing that, it's tough. And a couple times in this process, I've had to say, okay, step away from the emotional piece of it. How can you just let it go, get over it, look at it as if you were looking into your organization? Because a lot of times there's a lot more logic when there's less emotion. And so being able to get over it is sometimes even takes removing cultural artifacts. I kind of use that term, that shine change term of cultural artifacts, and the fact that they're like chairs, the size of chairs, the locations of offices, the, like you said, the awards on the wall, things like that. Sometimes you need to strip it all out and say, okay, how can we work together to make something happen?
Yeah, it's amazing.
In an academic perspective, you know, I work with young students and or all age students, but from an academic perspective, they definitely have to be able to manage it. If you want to go to school and have a full-time job and have kids, then okay, make it happen or don't. But either way, focus in a very intentional way and get over the whining. Just got to get over it. Having a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old at home, whining is hard to tolerate.
In a home. You know, it reminds me of what do you call it? What's that? You know, the now famous song, "Let It Go, Let It Go." You know.
Oh yeah.
Sometimes we just have
now
to let it go.
In my head again, yes. Yeah, but you're right. The Eagles even have a song about getting over it. Their lyrics are something like, "Your mama's too thin and your daddy's too fat. Get over it," or something.
And yeah.
It's exactly right.
It's funny, but yeah, you know, this I like the idea of that legacy, and sometimes we have to really ignore that legacy and just start from, you know, start fresh. You know, when you were talking about that, I was thinking of, you know, an example of letting go of the baggage as you looked at Blockbuster. Blockbuster dominated the video rental space for decades, right? And because of their legacy, their inability to let go of the past, they lost the future. I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but Netflix contacted and met with Blockbuster to help them to start creating an online presence, and they said no. They said no a couple of two or three different times, and then the CEO said, "Hey, you know, we're starting to feel the pinch between Netflix and Redbox," and they started to make changes, and he eventually got fired. They didn't want to go with those changes. 5 years after he got fired, the company disappears because they were not able to let go of yesterday's baggage.
Yep. Yep. And the framework and the frame of mind.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
All right. You know what? Let's talk about this real quick.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about hiring your weakness. And I think this is something that I want to talk about this because I think a lot of people make the mistake of hiring their strength. Talk about hiring your weakness. This is found on page 56, by the way, guys. The book, again, is the Strategic MVP. Go.
Hiring your weakness is a challenge. And you're right. A lot of people will inadvertently hire their strengths. So having people on your team that help kind of balance the team, have that diversity. And when we think about it as a concept, we go, okay, yeah, most people should do that. But a lot of times we don't. A lot of times CEOs like to have a board that agree with them. They like to have an executive team that go, yes, yes, sir, yes, ma'am. And I think that hiring your weakness really takes focus. It's also the idea of that, and kind of playing along with that, that get over it concept about sometimes we romanticize our weaknesses, saying like, oh, well, I'm just not a finance person, or, oh, I'm only in marketing, or, yeah, you know, I come out of this industry. And at the end of the day, since when is saying that you're bad at math or bad at finance make your ineptitude okay? You know, and so it's this idea that if you're not good at math, you're not good at finance, great. Find somebody that is. And recognize that we need people on our team that can challenge us. At our organization, we have the philosophy of race me to my chair. If one employee on my team is better at me than something, then rock and roll. They can have that, they can develop it, and they can create that. I mean, race me to my chair. It keeps me the best that I can be, and it also allows them to have some future opportunity for growth. That we have to have people around us that challenge, that strengthen our weaknesses, and that help kind of fully develop the entire team.
No, absolutely. I like that. Race me to the chair, race me to my chair. I think that if you're the type of business owner or CEO or department head or supervisor, whatever title you have, and you're afraid to hire people that are better than you or stronger than you in certain areas, then you might, you know, you might need some coaching. You might need some help because, you know, we've all heard multiple times where very big, prominent, successful people, Steve Jobs, talk about hiring only the best people. Google talks about only hiring the best people, people that are just this ridiculous quality. I think Google at one point said they were interviewing 300 people before they hired one.
And
so when you have that, when you start with that, when you're only concerned about hiring the best or getting the best results, you still get the credit. Steve Jobs still got all the credit for the iPhone, but I'm sure he had, you know, spent 20%.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So last but not least, I want to talk about commoditize your time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, time is the most valuable resource. We'll go into a business and we'll spend a lot of time in budget and financial budgets and investment strategies. And a lot of times people don't spend enough time on their time. How are we utilizing our time? I'm sure we've all been to an ineffective meeting, and I'm sure we've all been to a meeting about ineffective meetings, right? I mean, it's this idea that we have so many things that pull us in so many different directions, especially in this digital age. I know when I finally got a cell phone that was a smartphone and had my email on my phone, I thought, thank goodness, I'm going to have so much more time in the day because I can answer my emails at any time, and, you know, day or night. And really all that's done is just fill the day even more. So the concept, the book walks, and there's an entire section of the book on this because I believe it's so important. But that time is just really this valuable resource, and we should budget our time similar to how we budget our money, and how can we focus on the things that deserve our attention and take a look at those places where we spend a lot of our time that don't deserve it. You know, places that we're giving energy and attention to employees that are just not going to make it. How can we coach people out of the organization? How can we focus our time on those that really are the future? And how can we focus our energy on the places in our life where we need to get better? We need to strengthen. So time is everything. We only get one chance.
Absolutely. And speaking of that, we're out of time. Dr. Brandi Stankovic, thank you so much for stopping by. Looking forward to have you back again. It's been a blast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for stopping by.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate it.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.